And welcome to this episode of Ask Margot, where we find the answers to the sticky questions of life. I'm Margot de Coatsworth, and I'm happy to be here with you today. We have a few follow-on questions from our last episode. One of them covered how to keep your other person happy for the duration, forever after. And we covered 3 points. One was to ask what that person wanted and needed. Number two was to listen. And number three was to put all of your energy into making that thing happen. I think in retrospect that number two is redundant, really, because hopefully you're asking the question because you want to know, and then you're going to move on to doing something about it without being told to listen. That would be a given. So really, it's just a two-point answer to how to keep your other person happy. When I first came across this concept, it was about how to keep a wife happy. But it works both ways, as we know, as no relationship is one-sided. So today, let's think a bit more about that, because if you know that there's an area of difficulty that your other person is struggling with, it might be your participation in things, or perhaps your lack of participation. It may be that you don't recognize how important resolving an issue is to your other person, or finding a compromise, or making progress in a certain area. No relationship can be stagnant. The most foolish thing a person can do if they want their relationship to be successful long term is to ignore what's important, what matters to the other person. If you do that, you are signing off on your future. You're saying, it's not worth my effort. He or she is not worth my effort. I don't care enough about you to do anything about it, to address the thing that bothers you. Too bad, suck it up, get over it, live with it, or you change. That's often the response I hear. Those things don't work. That does not work. You might like to say to your other person, are you happy? I dare you to go home today and do that. If you're in a relationship, just ask that question. I don't think it's something we do often enough, and I think it's a vital one, because if you get anything other than an unequivocal yes, then you've got some work to do. You've got some questions to ask, you've got some listening to follow, and you've got some action to take. And it may be something they have to deal with themselves, but you are in a partnership, so you have a part to play, whatever it is, even if it's just support behind the scenes, encouragement, understanding, listening. If you ignore the dissatisfaction of your other person, then you're making a choice, a future choice. Okay, a bit of a switch of subject now. Just this last weekend, I read a book and I'd like to recommend it to you. It's called God Talks and it's by Ed Rush. It really is the most amazing book. Everything he says echoes with what I know and have found to be true. And I highly recommend it. This chap is an ex-Top Gun pilot, and I thought that wouldn't really interest me, but actually I found his stories quite compelling. And he relates the lessons he learnt flying those fighter jets and teaching younger pilots to business and to life, and to getting answers from God. He has a very strong, clear interchange with God, much like I do with the Word, and he walks you through a process to show you how to receive your own feedback. It's very cool. And I'm telling everybody about this book and recommending people buy it. It's very easy to digest. So, God Talks by Ed Rush. If you like online shopping, this is a worthy way to go shopping. I promise you'll be pleased you did it. It opens doors you didn't know were closed. Maybe next episode I'll walk you through a bit of how God Talks works. but on to our questions for today. This first one is about finding our purpose in life. There's an idea I've come across recently that I think is profoundly true, that every single one of us has not just a purpose or a mission, but an assignment. Not a job, not a role, not a task, an assignment. A job is what you do. An assignment is why you are here. Your assignment is the intersection of what you're good at, what the world needs, and what comes through you with a kind of inevitability, whether you plan for it or not. It's the place where your gifts, your experiences, and your character converge into something that only you can deliver. Some people call it purpose, some call it calling, some call it destiny. But let's call it your assignment, because an assignment carries an important truth. It already belongs to you. You don't compete for it. You don't audition for it. You don't have to be chosen for it. It's already yours, waiting for you to step into it. And here's the part we often forget. Assignments really announce themselves with fanfare. They appear as a pull, a pattern, a repeated theme in your life, something you keep circling back to, even when you try to go in a different direction. If you look closely at your history, you'll notice that life has been quietly preparing you for the very thing that only you can do. The science of this is very interesting here. Your brain's default mode network, the part involved in identity and meaning, becomes highly active when you think about contribution. Not success, contribution. In other words, your biology is wired to recognize and respond to your assignment. It settles you, it strengthens you, and it gives you energy instead of draining it. Metaphysically or energetically, the idea is even clearer. An assignment carries its own supply. When you step into what is truly yours, resources, people, ideas, timing, they gather around you because you're finally in alignment with what you're meant to build. And when you resist your assignment, life becomes unnecessarily heavy. We all know what that's like. You can feel like that by being in the wrong situation or the wrong job. You feel out of rhythm, off center, as though you're pushing something uphill. That's the friction of misalignment. Your assignment does not require you to be perfect. None of us are. It requires you to be willing. Willing to listen, to grow, to be seen, and willing to use the gifts you already have. Sometimes I see people with a special gift, like really special, clearly theirs, and they aren't using it. They should be, because that's where success lies for them. And your assignment will always be bigger than the version of you that doubts. I heard something important the other day. Don't doubt your beliefs or believe your doubts. Doubt your doubts and believe your beliefs. Your assignment will always be more generous, more expansive, and more impactful than the small story you have sometimes told about yourself. Stepping into your assignment is not about ego, it's about responsibility. If something has been entrusted to you, then you are the one who must carry it forward. Whether your assignment is to heal, to teach, to build, to lead, to restore, to create, or to elevate, can I say those again because they're great? To heal, to teach, to build, to lead, to restore, to create, or to elevate. It's yours because you are the one capable of doing it in a way that no one else can replicate. So if you sense a pull, if you feel a nudge, if you keep circling back to the same idea, the same work, the same contribution, that is not coincidence. It's your assignment calling you. and you don't have to know the entire path to begin. Assignments are revealed in steps, not maps. One decision opens the next. One act of stepping out uncovers the next opportunity. You're not behind, you're not late, you're exactly where you need to be to begin the next part of what's yours to do. And that takes faith. If you ever need a reminder, remember that you are the genie and you are the decider in your life. Okay, our next question is a money question. Bob, actually it's part of an earlier message from Bob. Bob says, I feel guilty wanting more money. I worry it makes me greedy or ungrateful. How do I remove that feeling so I can finally move forward? I also worry about what people will think. Well, I've always said to myself, Bob, that those who know you, who you really are, what motivates you, and those who don't will think what they want anyway. So, to the what people will think part, the answer is they'll think whatever they want. I want to say something stronger like, who cares? Who gives a damn? It's their affair. Don't give it any airtime. And if you get odd feedback from people or off feedback from people who are supposedly friends, set them free to spend their time with their own people because they are not your people. If someone isn't happy because you do well, that's just a reflection of them. Leave them to it. Money guilt is one of the most misunderstood emotional blocks and one of the most obstructive. It keeps good people small and generous people limited and has nothing to do with morality. Wanting more money does not make you greedy. Greed is taking without giving. Wealth is receiving in proportion to the value you create, or at least that's what it should be. Money guilt comes from three places. One is childhood messaging. You may have been taught that hard work is noble and money is suspect, or that wealth and goodness don't coexist. Well, that's just rubbish. It's better to work smart than hard. We all know people, or we are one of those people, who work very hard and don't have much to show for it. Working hard thoughtlessly is just stupid. The second issue is social programming. We admire wealth but also judge it simultaneously, creating internal conflict. That's like giving your taxi two different directions. You'll never go anywhere. Just be the best version of you, Bob, doing good things and hopefully with more resource to do them. The third thing is fear of surpassing others. And this is a real thing for many people. They don't think they should earn more than their parents did. Many people subconsciously fear that earning will disconnect them from family, friends, or community. Well, maybe it will. Refer to my opening comment about this question. There will be people who can't deal with your making more money, and they probably won't ever be rich because judging riches and rich people repels, it doesn't attract. Let's look at the science. I love the science of all this. If I tell you this stuff and science backs up what I'm saying, that's all good. Guilt activates the anterior insula, a part of the brain linked to self-punishment. That shuts down creativity, motivation, and even opportunity recognition. This means guilt literally blocks the pathways that lead to earning. Metaphysically, guilt sends out a message that says, I do not deserve more, or I can't handle more. And reality responds accordingly, not out of punishment, but resonance. So how do we heal money guilt? First, understand that having more does not take from others. It allows you to give more, create more, build more, and serve more, if you choose to. Lack never helped anyone. It's incapacitating. If you want to get past guilt, Bob, make a plan for what you would do for good if you had the financial resource to do so. That's a fun thing to do, and it will help you to make progress. Wealth is connected to responsibility, not indulgence. And if you see that as a truth, that you want money to elevate, create, contribute, and secure the future, not to hoard, well, that's a very honourable path to take. You need to rewrite your internal money identity. Catch yourself every time you speak negatively on the subject and turn it around. Read my little ebook, Tell a Different Story. It's under the tab Change for Good on my website, margotunlimited.com. Say to yourself, I'm good at managing more. I'm responsible with more. I'm generous with more. Your subconscious must be trained to see wealth as aligned with your nature. We're designed to create, to connect, and to contribute. Have a look at your life and see if you're doing what you're designed for. Interestingly, our next question is another money question. Must be on our minds at the moment. The question is, Margot, I keep hitting the same financial ceiling again and again. I earn and then somehow drop back. Why is this happening and how do I break through? This is one of the most common and most solvable financial patterns. I'm sure many of you listening will have experienced it. It has nothing to do with external circumstances. It's internal. It's about your identity. Every person has a financial set point, a subconscious comfort zone around money. Not how much they want, but how much they feel normal having. It works like a thermostat. If you rise above your set point, more income, more success, more opportunity, the subconscious will bring you back down through overspending, self-sabotage, or, in inverted commas, sudden setbacks. Not because it's set against you, but because it's resonating with your subconscious beliefs and expectations. Here's the science. The brain seeks homeostasis, a predictable emotional environment. If wealth feels unfamiliar, unsafe, or morally confusing, your brain will restore the old balance, even if that balance is scarcity. That's why people get money and then lose it. Your financial identity is a frequency. You attract only what aligns with that frequency. If your identity says, I'm a $60,000 person, you will not maintain a $300,000 life. Not because you can't, but because your identity won't allow it. So how do we shift the set point? One is raise your self-concept, not your hustle. Think of the new number you want and line up with it. Say, this higher level is normal for me. This level is safe and comfortable for me. Normalize having more. Visualize not the moment of receiving more, but the life you are living of maintaining more. Calm consistency is what upgrades identity. Celebrate small expansions. Every time you handle money calmly, wisely, and confidently, the thermostat rises. Congratulate yourself. Remove the emotional charge around money. If money equals stress, chaos, or fear, the subconscious will never allow more. Surround yourself with people for whom your desired level is normal. Identity is contagious. You know how they say you'll be a match for the five people closest to you? If they're all broke or all in debt, guess what you are being drawn into? The moment your subconscious sees the new level as who I am, the universe reorganizes around that expanded identity. Interesting. Our last question today is about longevity. And I had a question the other day from someone about this, living a long, healthy and happy life, which of course is everyone's dream. We watched a movie called The Blue Zones on Netflix, I think. I highly recommend it. The chap who did it travelled around the world studying the places where people live the longest, well into their 90s and past 100. And he looked at what those people actually had in common. What he found was fascinating because it wasn't about supplements or gyms or complicated routines. It was about how people lived. And he came up with three necessary components. The first was how they moved. These people don't go to the gym. They don't exercise in the modern sense necessarily. They simply move as a part of daily life. They walk, they garden, they cook, they carry things. They sit down and stand up often. Their bodies are used naturally all day long. So instead of thinking, I must do a workout, think, how can I build movement into my day, all day? Walk instead of drive when you can. Stand instead of sit sometimes. Stretch, bend, reach, carry, and potter. Your body is designed for motion, not furniture. The second ingredient was how they ate. Again, not diets, not fads. They eat simply, mostly plant, beans, vegetables, grains, fruit. Very little processed food, sugar, and no overeating. One of the most important habits they found was that people stop eating before they're really full. They eat until they're satisfied. This alone reduces inflammation, heart disease, and diabetes. It also keeps the digestive system young. And interestingly, they don't snack constantly. They eat meals, they finish, and they let the body rest between them. The third ingredient, and this is one of the most underestimated ones, is how they live socially and emotionally. These people belong to something. They have family close by, they have neighbours, purpose, and they're needed. They don't live isolated lives scrolling on screens. They sit together, talk, cook, laugh, and they stay connected. And that sense of belonging is not sentimental, it's biological. Loneliness has been shown to increase inflammation and weaken the immune system. So if you are lonely, don't wait for someone to come and rescue you. Get out there and initiate the connection you need. If you find lonely people, this sounds a bit judgy, but I find they are self-focused and they need to focus on others. You make the phone call. You organize the meeting. That will cure loneliness quick as a wink. If you help someone else with their issue, it will fix yours automatically. Connection strengthens. So what we learned from the Blue Zones is this. Longevity is not a product you buy. It's a lifestyle you build. It's how you move, how you eat, and it's how you relate. And there's one more thing that comes through very strongly. It's their attitude to life. These people don't see themselves as old. They see themselves as useful. They still contribute. They cook. They care for others, for grandchildren. They still have a role, which brings us back to the mind-body connection. If you think of yourself as declining, your body will follow that instruction. Listen to how you speak about time in your life. Do you talk about aging? Do you talk about losing it? If you think of yourself as active, purposeful, and involved, your body receives a very different message. So the real secret to living longer, like the Blue Zones, is not trying to defeat aging. It's refusing to withdraw from life. Move your body, eat simply, stay connected, stay useful, and don't retire from living. There are core factors that were distilled into these three points. Maybe we'll cover them next time. the original Blue Zones researcher Dan Buettner and National Geographic team did this research, and they identified 9 common lifestyle factors known as the Power 9. These were later grouped or summarised in some documentaries into broader themes like movement, food, connection. So we'll come back to the Power 9 next time. We're coming to the end of our time, but if you have questions you would like an answer to, a solution you are seeking, a way forward that you can't yet see for yourself, or if you've been doing something a particular way that's just not working, then write to us and let's see if we can sort that out. You can do so by sending an email to admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz or to me at margounlimited.com, Margo with a T, under the contact tab. And don't forget that this and other groovy shows produced by Access Radio are available on Spotify and Apple as podcasts. If you feel challenged about anything this coming week, just take a beat and say to yourself, I am the genie, meaning you hold the power of choice and change in your own hands, and it's up to you to step into that path so you can live the sparkling life intended for you and, frankly, worthy of you. We're going to finish with the word, our message today from the universe. Now, this is so interesting. I received this message before some of these questions came up, which just dazzles me every time because it shows what a big mind God has and how much he knows about absolutely everything. You know, when I say the universe, it's just a code word for God. Thank you for joining me today. I look forward to next time. Here's our message from the Word. If I am not on your side in all of this, then where would I be? Look to me and move forward. Look to me and be unshakable, for that is not just the nature of our relationship and your assignment. It is the nature of the methodology for all of you to live by. Ignore the rest. Dismiss the naysayers and the fearful ones, for if you keep only that company, it will define you. And you won't like that because it's not who you really are. If we are to do something dazzling, then we need to focus only on that and not allow for interference and smallness from anyone else. No one has achieved something big without having to break through that barrier. So step through it and get on with what you are here for.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.